Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the 67th episode of the Dapper Gaming Podcast for July 27th. A lot of sevenths going on. 57, I'd be a little worried. We passed that a while ago.
Yep.
Yeah, like over 2 months ago. We're back. We missed last week. More importantly, Joe is back. Joe's been gone
back
for half a month.
Yeah, it has been half a month.
2 weeks.
I was going to say, it hasn't been that long, but it's been that long.
It's been a while.
I've been gone for a while. I've been having a fun time.
So let's start off with the most obvious thing to start off with. Let's talk about SGC. It looked like you had fun.
I had lots of fun. For those who don't know, I went to SGC for 3 days, and I also went to Con Bravo. SGC was probably the funnest out of the two. I ended up spending my whole time hanging out with the Hidden Block guys and the normal boots guys. For those who don't know, JonTron, PBG, Cat Icarus, all those guys. I was hanging out with them at the bar, at parties, after parties and stuff, just hanging out with them. It was a great time. Got to see friends and give hugs and meet people in real life for the first time. It was weird, but it was fun, and I loved it. I had a great time.
What panels and stuff did you see? What did you do while you were there?
It was pretty much just to hang with friends, and then I went to my friends' panels. So the normal boots panel, the Hidden Block panel, John's panel, Austin's panel, or Peanut Butter Gamer, whatever you want to call them, Pro Jared's panel, just pretty much all the people I know, all of their panels. That was about it.
Sounds fun. What did you do at Con Bravo then?
Well, I was there with my friend. His name is his YouTube name is Jolly Goat. I was hanging out with him because he lives in Hamilton. So I was rooming with him, and we were hanging out. And we went to a couple different panels and hung out, ate food. We ate a lot of food. Saturday we did.
Did you also breathe? Did you do
yes.
any of that?
Yeah, we did some breathing. It was exciting, and we
you ate
played
food, consumed liquids, and breathed.
Yeah, that was it. That's all we did. We went to a Project M / Smash Bros. Tournament on Saturday, which pretty much took up the whole day. We got there at 11 a.m., and we didn't finish until 9 p.m. because it took them forever to do anything. It was horrible.
That sounds a little bit disappointing.
Yeah, it kind of sucked. But other than that, the convention was pretty good. Got to hang out with John and Satch and did You Know Gaming for a bit, just because they were there again, and hanging out with them.
Oh, like JonTron was there again?
Yeah, he was there.
When you said John, I was like, what? What John?
Proton John was also there.
Wow. That's
too many
the cool
Johns.
John. That's the John I'd hang out with. Sorry, JonTron. If I had a choice, I'd have to pick Proton John over you. It's the Canadian mess. We gotta stick together.
True.
There's not enough of us. There's a lot of us.
Yeah. I actually went and watched their panel. They had like a little game trivia panel thing going on.
Oh, like did they
do
the
Runaway Guys?
The Runaway Guys again? Yeah. Where like you play those games really quickly sometimes?
It was like games or like trivia and like a couple other different things. They did that. It was fun, it was cool.
Yeah, it's like Jeopardy, right? Like they got the big Jeopardy board up. Yeah.
It was kind of like Jeopardy. And I also went to the 404s, which are a local comedy act. Not really local. It's pretty much all of Ontario. They go to all the conventions around here, and they're a local improv group. And they're hilarious. And they're just great. They're always fun to watch. I had a great time watching them this time. I only got to watch their mature act because they have like an 18 plus and then they have like a normal act. I didn't get to see the 18 plus one because we just weren't in the mood because we had just finished the Juwario Memorial. We went to that and it was literally right after that in the exact same room. So we were like, a comedy act right after that doesn't really seem like the best idea. So we ended up skipping and going for pizza or A&W or something. I don't remember, but it was a good time. There was a lot of Smash Bros. There was a lot of panels. There was a lot of food, a lot of ice cream. It was a good time. I had fun.
It sounds fun.
I got to play Mario Kart 8 for the first time also.
Did you like it?
I didn't like it at first, but once I got used to the controls, I started to like it more. I really do like it now.
Yeah, there's something about those controls that were like really jarring at first. They seemed like kind of floaty.
They felt really tight to me compared to Mario Kart 7, trying to like drift around corners and stuff. It was really
There's something weird about the drifting where like it didn't quite feel right. I can't really put my hands on it. It's like it didn't do what you expected it to do. It like turned too tight sometimes when you expected it to go wider, and then it went way wider when you expected it like than when you what you expected it to do. But once you kind of like play it enough, you understand when it goes wide and when it goes narrow, but it like doesn't feel like other games that do drifting.
It was weird switching from Mario Kart 7 to that, and then also switching from Sonic All-Stars transformed to that. It felt really tight. Like, it wasn't loose enough. It wasn't, like, easy to drift around corners. But once you got used to it and you knew, like, where to start drifting, it felt a lot better.
Yeah, it... I still don't know how I feel about that game. I feel like the parts make it... By having, like, all the parts, they make the game kind of less approachable if you don't know what you're doing.
Yeah, I remember you saying
that. And it's
that.
Not so much that, like... That. And it's not so much that it's because they're, like, this major game-playing thing, but because they look like they're a major game-playing, like, gameplay-changing thing.
I played as Bowser in a cart that had no handling, and then I played as Toad in a cart that had full handling, and I didn't feel a difference at all.
Yeah, but even if it's like not this hugely gameplay changing experience by changing these like parts, it looks like it is, and it doesn't do a good enough job of explaining what it is, like what happens when you change the parts.
Yeah.
And so it's like hard for me to get friends to just like sit down and play it, because they're like, I don't know what any of these parts do. And I'm like, they don't really do anything. Except for, like, switching between a bike and a cart.
Yeah.
Like, that's the only thing that really changes, because that changes the handling, like, really substantially. But
yeah, it does. That's the one thing I noticed. Bikes and carts do feel a lot different. I like the Yoshi bike. When you drift around corners, he does, like, the whole... Yeah, his arms come out on the side of the bike. It's cute.
I have the Yoshi bike. I don't use it.
It's
Maybe
cute.
Maybe I should.
It's cute.
All right. So, while you've been gone, have you been playing any games? Tell me of the games you've been playing.
Okay. Well, I didn't really play anything at SGC. There wasn't really much. I wanted to go to the Indie Haven, but every time I went there, it was closed. Like, I go there at, like, 5 p.m., and I'm like, it's probably still open, and it was, like, closed. And I went there on, like, the last day, and it closed super early on the last day, so I didn't get to play any of the indie games there. I was like, okay, whatever, fuck it. And at SGC, no, at Con Bravo, I mean, I played, obviously, Smash Bros. Since I was in a tournament. And for anyone wondering, I lost every single match 0-2. I did really, really good. I lost every match 0-2, and I still did better than my friend, who is actually really good at Smash Bros. And I have to say, he's very annoyed by that.
How did you do better than him? Did you just, get one more stock than he did?
In pools, I went 0-2 in every match. So when I was put into winner's bracket, we were both put into winner's bracket, because everyone got in because there wasn't enough people. The first person that I faced didn't show up. So I ended up winning that match because he didn't show up. And then my friend lost his first match, and then he lost his first match in loser's bracket. So I did better than him by a little bit because someone didn't show up. Yep.
All right. Sure. You placed better than he did.
Yeah, I plays better than he did, but he actually won more matches than me and then did better than me, which is funny. And I also played a ton of cool Konami rhythm games. That was my Xbox controller. I played a ton of awesome Konami games that I haven't played yet. I played DDR, obviously. I played a ton of DDR because I love DDR. But there are a couple new games. Beatmania, which is one where it's got like this keyboard thing on the side and then a DJ pad. And the notes scroll down like Guitar Hero. And you have to tap it and then like slide it every time a note comes up. And that one was kind of fun. There was another one that I didn't get my hands on. It didn't look that interesting. There was like 9 buttons in like a triangle, like in like, I don't fucking, it was a one, it was like 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 9. No one watching the listening.
In like a squiggly line, right?
Where yes, it's like in a squiggly yeah. line. Yeah, 9 like a buttons in a squiggly line. Yeah, zigzag. And you just had to press them, and it was like one person against one person, or you could play by yourself with all nine buttons. And it looked cool. It looked kind of childish because the buttons were like huge. They were like at least 4, 4.5 inches of like in diameter. Yeah, diameter. Like about 4, 4.5 inches in diameter. So they're huge buttons. I watched one guy and he was crazy at it. He was playing on like the hardest difficulty and he was just like, it'd be like, press 4 buttons at the same time. He was like pressing shit with his elbow. It was crazy. And the last one I play, which has to be the coolest, which I really want, if anyone's into rhythm games, really into rhythm games, because it costs like $500 to buy a unit or like $300 to make it yourself. It's called Sound Vortex. Or Audio Vortex, one of them. It's a Konami game. It's one of their newest rhythm games, and it's amazing. There's 4 buttons, and shit scrolls down just like Guitar Hero style. And you press the 4 buttons, and then there's also 2 buttons for long notes on the bottom. And when you hit that, it actually like remixes the song, which sounds really cool. And then the best part is that there's 2 knobs at the top, and you turn them as like these crazy ass laser things come down. It's hard to explain, but if you watch a video of it, it's amazing and it's super fun. Definitely one of my favorite rhythm games now, and I want to get a machine, but I don't have $500 or $300 to make one. It was definitely worth it, though, standing in line to play that, because it was really fun. So that's kind of what I played at the conventions. Other than that, I have played... Since I was sitting in the bus, I had to sit in a bus to get to Con Bravo and sit on a plane to get to SGC. I was playing some Link Between Two Worlds and playing it on Hero Mode.
I think it's just Link Between Worlds.
Yeah. I was finally started Hero Mode, and it's pretty fun. It's really hard on Hero Mode, but I'm enjoying it. I already beat the game twice. Yeah, twice. On normal mode. I'm trying it on hero mode now. And so I'm really enjoying that. I finally beat Kid Icarus Uprising. It was actually a really good game. I really enjoyed it. I had trouble getting into it because I played it up to like level like 14 and then I got bored of it and I put it down and I had trouble playing it again. But I picked it back up and I really enjoyed it. Really enjoyed how it ended. The final boss was really fun. It's a great game. If you haven't played Kid Icarus Uprising, buy a 3DS and play it. what else? Oh,
man. And about buying a 3DS. I was like really close to buying a 3DS the other week.
Yeah.
You can't get regular 3DSs anymore. Like I haven't been able to find one. Yeah, you can only find the XLs.
There's like 4 of them just sitting in the case at the retro game store around my house.
The Walmart, the Best Buy, Future Shop, all of them, they only have 3DS XLs and 2DSs, and I don't really want an XL. Like, I don't like so I would get an XL, but I'm not gonna play Monster Hunter and stuff on it. I already know that, because like it's just not where I want to play that type of game. Yeah. So I'm pretty much only gonna play like Zelda and like RPGs on it, basically.
I definitely think the XL was worth it. I'm glad I didn't go with the smaller version.
But it's like an extra $50, and I'm not super into that, because I'm only really going to play it once or twice a year.
You could go with the 2DS. It's about the same size as the regular one, but if you hate that it can't flip or whatever,
I don't like,
and that it's not 3D.
I don't like how it holds in my hand.
Yeah?
Yeah, I prefer the clamshell. Also, the space on it. I want something that's like quite portable, and the 2DS is too big because it doesn't fold.
That's true. My friend has one. I know he enjoys
but
it.
The thing that I don't really like about the XL is that it's a lower pixel density, and but it's the same resolution, but a lower pixel density, and so it doesn't look as good. I know that's strange, but it doesn't look as good, and it costs more.
It's really hard to notice the difference. I find, like, when I put the two consoles next to each other and I look at the difference, it's really hard to notice. Mm.
But I also don't want to pay out the extra money for the XL when I'm only going to use it. Like, there's only really two games that I want to play on it. It's like the new Pokemon and...
If you can find the original size one, then I'd go with it. I bought the bigger one mostly because A, I wanted the bigger screen. B, because the battery lasts much longer on the XL than it does on the regular one.
Does it?
It lasts about 3 to 4 hours longer.
Oh, well then. That maybe makes it worth it.
And I think the XL comes with a larger SD card. I could be wrong about that.
I have so many SD cards, I don't care. Yeah, I have two 128 gig ones just sitting here.
I didn't have any SD cards because my mom uses all the ones that she has. She has like five of them, and she uses them on all her cameras. And I only had two, and one's for my camera, which I'm not going to use on my 3DS, and then the other one is for my jailbroken Wii. So I need that for my Wii. So I needed the SD card. I think I could be wrong, though. Maybe they come with the same size. But I know the XL I got came with a 4 GB SD card. But I love the 3DS. It's a great system. I always love bringing it with me on vacations and stuff. It's a great time killer. There's so many games on it that are fun to play.
Yeah, that's why I was kind of close to buying one, because I'm about to like go on a huge road trip.
Yeah.
By huge, I mean I'm driving to Mexico and back. I'm driving for 2 weeks. And so, not that it takes 2 weeks to get to Mexico from where I am. It takes a day.
Yeah.
But...
Wow.
Well, you jump on the I-5 and you drive for 24 hours.
Oh, God.
Like,
that's,
like, driving time is 24 hours. And then I am to where I want to be. But my girlfriend's coming with me, so we were going to split the driving, which means there's 12 hours of me sitting in a seat not doing anything.
Yeah, but you might want to put about 8 of those hours to sleeping.
Well, I'd assume that we're going to sleep at the same time. Because we're gonna get a motel on the way there, so I'm gonna drive for like 8 hours, and then we're gonna stop and sleep, and then I'm gonna start driving again.
Oh, okay.
And then we're gonna
that
be in Disneyland,
sense.
And then we're gonna go to Disneyland for 2 days, and then we're gonna drive the last 5 hours after the Disneyland trip.
Well,
because Disneyland's
that
only
like
6 hours away from where I'm actually trying to get to, so we're gonna go to Disneyland.
Luigi's Mansion would last you for a couple 8 hours on that road trip.
Yeah, that's why I was really close to buying a 3DS, but it's too expensive for me only going to be playing it like for a day.
You know, if you buy a 3DS, you'll end up, I feel like if you bought a 3DS, you would end up cracking and buying Monster Hunter. Even if you don't want to play it on the system, I feel like you'd be like, I kind of want a new Monster Hunter. And I kind of really want to play it. And then you'd be like, it's right there in the store. And then it's like $10 off. And then you pick it up.
It doesn't like feel right in my hand. It really bugs my hand to play those kinds of games like on portable because they're too small. I got these big man hands and they're too big. I can't get my thumbs to the edges.
And even if you were to like want to play Monster Hunter on it, you'd have to find the pro analog stick that you attach onto it, so you get two analog sticks.
They have the XL ones out now.
They do?
Yeah.
You can order them from Nintendo. Oh, you have to order them?
Yeah, well, you were always able to get them. Well, so I don't know if they ever released them in stores for the XL here, but you could always get them on the Japanese Nintendo site and order them to North America, and they just fit and plugged in. But I'm pretty sure they're on the Nintendo America site now, too.
Oh, okay.
And they're like $15.
Because I remember someone saying that I know at EB Games said that they stopped selling them recently. So they might have sold them in stores for a little bit.
I guess, maybe. Because I know that you were able to, like, they just popped up one day on, like, the Nintendo America store under accessories. And I was like, oh. Because I kept, like, looking at, checking up for, like, price reductions and stuff and see if I could get, like, refurbs what or games... anything like that.
Yeah. What games use that other than Monster Hunter?
Well, you can use it for anything, really. It just replaces the D-pad, doesn't it? It just replaces that D-pad or whatever.
Oh, okay.
So, or no, I don't think it acts as a replacement, but... it acts as a replacement for the D-pad, doesn't it? Isn't that the purpose of it?
I don't know.
Because it's like circle pad, D-pad, and the four buttons, right? On a 3DS? Yeah. Like the face layout? Circle pad on one side.
D-pad's right underneath the analog stick.
Oh. I don't know. I think there's a few games. Anything where you have like where you would have like camera movement, basically. Anything that's 3D, you could probably use it with Luigi's Mansion.
Yeah, it could probably replace like anything where you have to tap on the screen to look. Yeah, I think it works with Kid Icarus and a couple other games. I'm not sure. But 3DS is great.
Tell me about Destiny, because I know that's the next thing that you were going to talk about.
Yeah, that's the last thing I've been playing, and I was skeptical on it. I really wanted to get into the alpha or the beta, but I couldn't. I knew a couple people who were in it just because they were. I used to be in the pro community. I know pros. They got early access to it in alpha, and I was hoping to get into it back then through them, but they couldn't get me in. So I had to wait until it was an open beta because SGC sent me my fucking early beta access really late.
I think that they sent it to you not knowing that the open beta was just going to happen. That's probably what happened. They probably acquired those keys, and then open beta just happened, and they're like, oh, damn it.
No, because I got it on, like, the 20... I got it on a date, and then the dates in the email were like, put in this beta key, and then on this date, you can start doing it. And it was like, the dates were like the 12th or something. It was like, you could start playing on the 12th, and I got the email on like the 22nd. I was like, what the fuck? So I don't know. That was messed up. But I had two friends who were like, I don't like it. It's shit. I'm canceling my pre-order, and I don't want it. So I was really worried about it, but I picked it up, and it's really fucking good. It's literally like...
I don't know if a company could ever make a game that expensive that would actually be bad.
Yeah.
Not a company that actually makes games professionally. Yeah. Like, I mean, even like The Old Republic, which was done by BioWare, Austin or whatever, which was just owned by EA. Like, I mean, people didn't like The Old Republic because it was kind of just WoW. But it was a good WoW. And I mean, that game was hugely expensive. Like, I mean, Call of Duty is a game that people hate on too. Also hugely expensive. Call of Duty is not bad as like a game. If you consider it without all of the other Call of Duties, you're like, wow, this is a really good game. But just because it's the ninth like iteration of this same goddamn game, that's why people don't like it. But it's not because it's a bad game.
Yeah, they're
you're
well
hard pressed
games.
To say that a game that expensive to make by a professional company is actually bad. It's just derivative.
Yeah, it's definitely derivative. But no, this game is actually really good. There's not many things I can say bad about it. My friend kind of had the best way to explain it.
It's Halo.
It's like if someone made a total conversion mod for Borderlands to make it look and act more like Halo, but it still plays like Borderlands. So the scenery and art style is in more of a Halo fashion, and the enemies act more like Halo 4 characters, surprisingly. And the jump and movement speed and all that feels a lot like Halo, but the but when you're fighting enemies, it's a lot more like Borderlands. So it's like when you're shooting at them, they'll slowly die. But if you hit like their critical spot, then you'll get critical damage on them. So if you shoot like an enemy with a head in the head, then it'll do damage. Or if you, there's like really a little bullet
spongy. Because like I didn't. Are the shooting mechanics better than Borderlands? Because yes. I feel like the shooting mechanics in Borderlands were always really bad. And so, like, I liked the concept of Borderlands. I hated its execution in almost every single way. And so, if you're pitching me on this is a lot like Borderlands, but not bad, then I might pick this thing up.
What do you mean by, like, spongy? You mean, like, the enemies absorb a lot of bullets?
Yeah.
No, there's actually only one enemy, and it's supposed to be like a boss type creature that takes a while to kill. There's the actual boss that takes a little while to kill, and then there's like the
Borderlands. Yeah. You would go to like a boss fight and you'd have three people with you, and so it would just take you 20 minutes of standing there shooting at it to kill it, because it's like there's lots of you, so I'm gonna scale his health up way too high, even though the boss fight is trivial. And so it's like 20 minutes of standing there shooting this dude, and it's just like, this is boring.
Yeah.
I don't care about this anymore. Please die.
The first boss fight in this game, it's the only like big kind of trying to think of the name of it. I always forget the name of it. What's like it called when you have like a group of people in World of Warcraft? Oh, raid. It's kind of like a raid. It's like a big long mission, and at the end there's a giant boss that you have to fight. It's a level 6 mission, and the boss is really, really cool and well done. It looks great, and I can't wait to see what comes up later past level 6 missions. But it still takes a little while to kill the boss, but he doesn't grow much if you have more people. So if it's just you by yourself, it's going to take a little while. But if you have three people, then it's going to go much faster. When I had a group of three people, I was level 8, and the other two people were, like, level 6. It took us about maybe 10 minutes to kill the boss, but the whole mission takes about 40 minutes to run through, just depending on how good your teammates are and if you know what you're doing and your teammates don't suck and constantly dying. But it feels good. Everything, like the enemies die quickly, especially if you're a higher level than them. If you're the same level than them, they still die pretty quickly if you're shooting them in the head. But it's the right amount. Like, it doesn't take too long to kill something, but it doesn't take too short to kill something. It feels good. The guns feel really great. The motion, all that, that's obviously all well done. It's Bungie. You have to expect that. They've been making shooting games for over 15 years now, so it's really good. But I have to say, it's one of the first person shooter MMOs that is actually really, really well done. It's definitely worth. I wasn't going to buy it, but I'm definitely going to pick it up now. I'm definitely into it.
What platform are you playing the Destiny beta on?
I am playing it on the worst possible platform. I'm playing it on the Xbox 360.
Someone told me there wasn't going to be a 360 version, so I just really wanted to quickly confirm that, because I was like, I'm pretty sure there's a 360 version coming out.
Yeah,
because I'm pretty sure I know people playing it on the 360 right now.
I'm playing it on the 360, and it's...
I might buy a next-gen console before winter, so I might pick it up.
It's definitely worth a pickup. Even if, like, the multiplayer I really love, mostly because there's two different versions of multiplayer. There's a version where your level matters, and there's a version where your level doesn't matter. Because everything in multiplayer carries over from campaign. So all the weapons that you pick up in campaign, all of your stats and all of that carries over into multiplayer. So if you're level 8 and you're fighting a level 1 guy, you're going to kick his ass if you're playing on a game type where levels matter. But if you're playing on a game type where levels don't matter, then everything evens itself out.
Yeah, so kind of like how, like, PvP in Guild Wars 2, like the big PvP battlegrounds and stuff, they just scale everyone's level to max level.
Yeah.
And, that's like, how all their equipment and stuff. So
yeah, that's how it works in this game, except there's also ones where your level does matter. So if you go in...
Well, like, in Guild Wars, if you were to, like, go into PvP with someone, like, out in the world, then it, like, it doesn't scale you, obviously.
Yeah. It's well done. I really like the multiplayer. It feels good. It's a new experience outside of Halo. I feel like Bungie was probably just tired of Halo and they wanted to do something new. And this new thing that they did is really good. It feels really good. It plays really well. And it's the first, if you're into massive multiplayer online games and you're also into first-person shooters, you're going to love this because it's a really good mesh of the two. Just imagine Borderlands 2, but better, not as funny, but it's also a massive multiplayer online game, which could get annoying if you hate other random people joining your missions while you're playing, but I really enjoy it. I just like tagging along with random people while I'm playing and helping them out and doing stuff. It's a cool experience.
I think I'm okay with not as funny because I didn't find Borderlands 2 funny at all, so...
I found some of it funny.
I couldn't get far enough in to find these parts where people said it was kind of funny because Tiny Tina and Claptrap bugged me so much I like actively didn't want to play the game. So yeah. Everyone was like, this line was really funny. And I'm like, but what about these 5,000 lines that were frustrating to even listen to?
Yeah. I thought the Easter eggs were funny. That was the one thing that I thought Easter egg wise that was funny. Like the Minecraft Easter egg, or there's a couple other ones that were good.
Yeah, I never bothered because they bug me too much. But
I don't blame you.
Alrighty, what have I been playing? I've been doing a few things. Since you've been gone, I've found a place to live in September. Big deal. So I'm going to be living much closer to work. I'm going to potentially have more space. I also came up with a concept for a new show. I'm just trying to find the time to start doing it. It'll take a lot less time than reviews. So
that's cool.
But hopefully I'll get around to doing that this week. Probably do it tomorrow. Probably record the first episode tomorrow. But what I've actually been playing, I've been playing a lot of Dota 2. The International was only a couple of weeks ago. It ended actually last Monday. Big deal. Newbie won. They won over $5 million for their team.
I remember reading that, and I remember being extremely jealous.
A lot of money. The production was fucking insane. It was at Key Arena in Seattle, which is where the NBA team for Seattle used to play. They sold it out.
Jesus.
ESPN actually broadcasted live parts of the International on ESPN3.
I remember hearing that. And it's been a long time since competitive gaming has gotten airtime in America. So that's surprising.
Yeah, like on actual TV. It's not uncommon since, in China or Korea or even Sweden.
It's normal there, but I think the last time it was aired live was probably back in 2007. Yeah, 2007 for MLG, back when they were doing Halo 2. So it's been a long time.
I think there was maybe also a Counter-Strike tournament that was for a lot of money that got some airtime. But it would have been back in, 2007, 2008.
Yeah, so it has been a long time.
Yeah. But every team, all the previous International winners were eliminated really early. In fact, it was, kind of a big deal, but Alliance, the team from Sweden who won last year, was eliminated before the main event. They got eliminated in the group stage. So, because they, just did abysmally... they got eliminated in the first couple days of the tournament.
That sucks.
And then Na'Vi and Invictus Gaming was the team that I was rooting for. They both got eliminated in the first day of the main event. So second day of the main event. Because I think the first day, the way that the first day worked out is that they just played out the winner's bracket to see who was going to be in the grand championship and then played out the loser's bracket. And Na'Vi and IG were in the loser's bracket and they both got eliminated. Little disappointing. I'm a bit of an IG fan. Chuan's my man. But
man.
I watched so much Dota, and then I played a lot of Dota. I'd watch Dota for like 8 hours, and then I'd be like, I'm going to try some of these things. So I just like played a lot of heroes that I never play that were being picked a lot. Like, for example, I never play Faceless Void. So I never play, like, carries. I always play supports in that game. Carries are the guys who get kills. Supports are the guys who help set them up.
Yeah.
And I always play supports, but I decided to play a couple carries. So I played Faceless Void. He's really easy to play. It's really easy to play a carry. It's crazy. Man. You just, like, use an ability and then right-click people to death, and you don't, like, fuck up. And your whole team just... And, like, if you die, you're just like, oh, well, this support fucked up. And then you just yell at them in chat, and you're all good. You're, like, blameless.
That's horrible.
It's way less fucking stressful. I might just start playing carries. But no one plays supports, so there's the issue. If no one chooses a support, you're going to lose. But, yeah. I played a lot of Dota. I got some cool Dota 2 items. I got some items that are signed by personalities from the International.
Like, oh, wow.
Like James Harding and Casey Atchison.
So how do digital items get signed?
When you hover over the item, it has, like, a little icon on it that says, like, signed, like, signature. And then when you hover over the item, it, like, shows the description of the item, and it, like, has their... Oh, sorry, I bumped my mic. It has their signature, like, underneath the description of the item. So that's it'll cool. be, like, here's a description of this item. Here are, like, the gems that are in it. And then a signature. And it's, like... Yeah.
That's cool.
But they also track certain things. Like, my case... I have Ethereal Blades for Morphling. Or I think they're called, like, the Ethereal Tear Blades. They're just, like, blades on this character called Morphling's, like, arms. And they're signed by Casey Atchison, so, like, they're stat tracking. So it's, like, this is how much gold I've spent while playing Morphling, and then, like, Casey Atchison's, like, signature underneath it. And then I have a similar thing for Drow Ranger. I have, like, the Mask of Madness for Drow Ranger signed by James Harding.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah, it's neat. So, like, these items cost, like, a dollar more if you're just, like, buying them from the store. And you, like, get this limited edition item that... So they only sell the signatures for, like, during the time of the International. You can't just buy signed items all the time. It's, like, this one time of the year, you can buy these items that are only available, like, for a couple weeks while the International is running that are signed by people who help run the International.
I bet you any money those sell for a lot on the Steam store.
So talking about things that sell for a lot on the Steam store, my friend went to the International and he got a very rare courier that sells for $1,500, like real cash, not on the Steam store. Like you sell it kind of through it, if that makes any sense.
Yeah.
So, he got a golden Doomling courier. So, the Doomling courier is a courier that looks like Doom, but, like, tiny and chibi style. Doom is this, like, big demon devil from Dota. And he's, like, but his is gold, and there's only, like, 6 or 7 of them in the world. And you could only get them if you went to the International, and he got one. Mm-hmm. And... instantly he had like people sending him messages on Steam like, hey, do you want to sell me your Doomling? And like, because people set up bots that just like search for these rare items, and when they show up in an inventory, these bots like trigger that it like showed up and like tells you.
Wow.
And so he had to set his inventory to private so that people couldn't see it, because by default your inventories on Steam are public so people can see what you have in them. And so, like, that's what these bots do. They, like, scan people's inventories and try to find rare items and then offer them money for them. But there's... I think right now there are 0 of them on the marketplace. That's how rare they are. But my friend got offers for, like, $1,600 to sell them through, like, PayPal and stuff.
That is a lot of money.
Yeah. He's he's not selling it though. That's the right thing to do.
I don't know.
But he doesn't even play support. I want him to give it to me because I play support. Give me your Doomling.
I would sell it to pay off school debts.
Yeah, but he doesn't have any like debts right now. He's got a job and stuff, and he's like doesn't have any debts left over from school. So he's like, I don't need to sell this. Obviously, if he needed money, he would probably sell the goddamn Doomling.
Yeah.
But because like it's a digital item, but he doesn't need to sell it. So
yeah,
like what's he gonna do with that $1,600? Buy Steam games? Buy Dota 2 items?
Well, if he sold
buy
it
another
PayPal,
Doomling,
he could buy a lot of. If he sold it through PayPal, he could buy a lot of things.
Yeah, but it's like, what would he want to buy? Video games, Dota 2 items. That's like his reasoning behind it was like, I could sell this, but then I'd just buy video games, and I don't need money for video games. So,
I already have money for video games.
But yeah, I've been playing a lot of Dota 2. I love that game. I'm really back into that game. I hadn't really played a lot of it the last couple of months, but the international totally brought me back in. I bought a compendium and I did all the things for it, and I wanted to level it up, and I got really into it. And
now
it
you
really
need
fun.
To go win the internationals next
now
year.
Now I need to go win the internationals so I can buy Dota 2 items.
Yeah,
but
$5 million for Dota 2 items.
Yep, that's how that works. But no, it was really fun. I'm gonna try to play more Dota. I'm gonna try to like keep up with it because I'm not like bad at that game. I just don't play enough of it to know all the characters. But I've been really getting back into that game, and then I've been playing Divinity Original Sin,
that's the new one, right?
Yeah, it's by Larian Studios. It was their Kickstarter game. It was Kickstarted last year. It's a classic RPG game, like a computer RPG, like Baldur's Gate or Ultima 7 or something like that. It's really good. I think this is the best like CRPG that has come out in years. I think that it's probably even better than those like Baldur's Gate remakes that came out. This game's fantastic. There's a lot of environment interaction in the game. So like, for example, you'll find like barrels full of water or oil or like poison, like gook. Well, they call it ooze, but it's ooze that poisons you if you walk through it. And you can like shoot these barrels and like spray out all this water from a water barrel, for example. It makes a huge puddle. And then like with your mage character, you can shoot lightning at the puddle, and then it electrocutes everyone who's standing in the puddle.
That's actually really cool.
Yeah. Or if you had like a huge puddle of water, right? And then you shoot a fireball at it, it turns the water into steam. So then there's this steam cloud there. And then you can shoot the steam cloud with lightning to electrify the steam cloud, and then everyone standing inside of it gets stunned.
I saw that you had like you. I remember you talking about that game, and I looked it up, and I was actually really interested in it. It looked really cool. So I might have to try it out.
It's a game where your like actual strategy and using the environment really changes how the game plays. So there was a fight in the game that took me, I tried like 20, 30 times, and I kept dying. I kept dying every single fucking time, and I was really mad at it. And I turned it off, and I came back the next day, and I was like, fine, I'm going to just do this fight again. And I turned it back on, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to summon an ice elemental, because this guy is a fire-based enemy, and this guy's a fire-based enemy. So I'm going to summon an ice elemental. That's the first thing I'm going to do. So I summoned that ice elemental. Fight was super easy. So it's like
it literally won the match for me.
Yeah. And so it's like the combat in that game, once you understand kind of that you're supposed to be countering the stuff that makes your like opponent strong with like these opposite elements that make total sense. Like nature or like poison characters are weak to fire. So if you use fire spells on them, they die really quickly. And then fire is weak to water, so use lots of water spells on fire guys, and they die really quickly. And if you use lightning spells on water guys, they die really quickly. And if you use rock spells on lightning, then lightning dies really quickly. So, like, there's all the... I mean, it's a really basic system, obviously.
Yeah.
But the ways that they interact... The ways that they interact are way, like, beyond how they work in other games. Like, in Pokemon, you can't make your Charmander light the grass on fire. But you can in this. So, like, there's ways to interact with your spells that make these kind of crazy, like, AoE environmental reactions. And those environmental reactions are really compelling reason to play that game.
I definitely need to try it. I need to steal it from you because we share games and play it.
It's also got a really neat story. It's a hard game. It is definitely an old school RPG. Like, it doesn't tell you where to go. You have a big journal and you have to read the journal and kind of figure it out from there. It's not like, I need to go to the lighthouse. The lighthouse is marked here on my map. It's like, I need to go to the lighthouse. It says the lighthouse is to the west.
Somewhere to the west.
Yeah, so you go to the west. Now, to be fair, the map is not nearly as big as, let's say, Skyrim.
Yeah.
It's broken up into, like, a bunch of different chunks. And so, like, if you're in Sisiel, which is, like, this coastal town, it's big. It takes, like, a couple of minutes to walk from one side to the other of that, like... chunk of map, and there's enemies in between. So if you were actually to do it, it'd take you like an hour because you have to keep fighting all these guys, but they don't respawn. So once you've killed them all, you go through really quick, obviously. So like, they're not physically these huge areas, but there's a lot in them, and so you can really find everything that you need to find. Because, like, it's not a Skyrim-sized, like, map where it's like, go west. And it's like, you could walk west for half an hour. It's like, you can walk west for 5 minutes. So, but, it's really compelling. It has a lot of old-school tendencies that I really, really enjoyed and missed. And as an RPG, it's really hard. Just because you can't... There's riddles and stuff and actual puzzles in the game.
Yeah.
The puzzles in the first zone are really easy and obvious, but I think that's just to, like, try to get you started when you go into the, like, second zone where the puzzles get a lot harder.
Yeah.
I've been playing the game for a long time, and I haven't made it through the second zone. I just made it to the third zone, kind of. I'm, like, in between the third zone and the second zone, where I'm in the third zone for a quest, but eventually I'm going back to the second zone. I haven't finished its story, but I really like it, and it has a lot of neat RPG mechanics, like a lot of role playing mechanics that are kind of cool. So when you start the game, you make two characters, and these two characters are supposed to be like source hunters who are basically like magic police. They police magic, and you can role play them separately. So the decisions of one are not necessarily the decisions of the other. And then they have to, like, argue with each other. And when they argue with each other, you play rock, paper, scissors for one of them, and the computer plays rock, paper, scissors for the other one. And, like, the person who wins, like, a best out of whatever, like, wins the argument. And you do what that character chose. So the game has actually got online multiplayer. So one of you, like, you play one of the characters, and your friend could play the other one. And in that case, like, you're both playing rock, paper, scissors against the other person. It's a really neat mechanic. I like it. I just like how, like, the conversations play out. So you could have, like, one character who... Now, the choices aren't, like, a lot... They're not as black and white as like, Mass Effect. But basically, you could have one character played as, like, evil or bad, and another one played as good. And, like, if the good character has more charisma, which, like, I guess affects how well they can speak to people, then they could, like, more easily convince the bad player that their choice is the right choice to make. And then they like win the rock paper scissors easier basically, and then what they get like want to have happen happens more frequently, but then you don't have like as high of combat stats.
Yeah,
but it's a really interesting mechanic. There's a lot of cool stuff in that game. If you're into older games like Baldur's Gate and stuff like that, then you should definitely be playing Divinity, because it's easily one of the best RPGs I've played in years.
If you're into newer RPGs like Skyrim, might not be your cup of tea.
Yeah, probably not your cup of tea then. But if you like Morrowind, you'd probably like this, because like a lot of the ideas are still there. I mean, mechanically, the game's hugely different. Just the way that it tracks like quests are very similar. It's actually got a really good fast travel system. I like that you don't fast travel to quests, you fast travel to towns. So that's nice. Like, it makes sense that you can fast travel to a town, but it doesn't make sense that I can just fast travel to right next to quest location.
Do you have to pay?
No.
For the
You have like a magic teleporter stone.
Oh, okay. Because I know in one game you had to like pay for your traveling. I think that was Morrowind.
Yeah, in Morrowind. And also in this, they have a... You can barter with every character in the game. So, like, if you talk to them, you can trade stuff with them. It's really neat. So, if someone, like, happens to have, like, as a warrior and they have a sword that you want, if you, like, offer them enough, maybe they'll give you the sword that you want. But, like, it's just kind of cool. I really like it. That game just has a lot going on for it. It's cool to play a game where you're not limited, basically. I can do whatever I want. I don't even have to do the quests. I could kill the quest givers. That's very possible. That you just, like, kill a quest giver, and you can't get that quest because you killed the guy. So, I mean, you could theoretically break it so that you can never, like, beat the game. But, wow. Like, just like you could in Morrowind. But, it's cool. I like it.
Yeah. That's awesome. I definitely need to try that game if I'm not busy. There's a new game coming out that I'm interested in. It comes out for early access on the 30th, and I really want to get it. It's called Crypt of the Necrodancer.
Oh, I've seen that.
Yeah.
It's kind of cooler with a DDR pad than like using the keyboard, but...
I have a DDR pad, but it's PlayStation 2 only, so either I need to get a converter or I need to get a USB dance pad. But for anyone who doesn't know...
You know who you should talk to? You should talk to Ryan. He was on the podcast last week from Ryan's Video Game Corner. Yeah, he's really into DDR, and he said he's like... I can't remember. There are these custom dance pads that he bought that are like... They're not the big metal ones, but they're like in this weird box, kind of.
Yeah.
And he said, like, these are the best dance pads I've ever had, and they're, like, not nearly as expensive as the big, like, metal ones that cost, like, $500.
I know.
And they're, like, guaranteed to never break.
Yeah. I know Sunder from, he's part of That One Video Gamer with JK Completes It and The Completionist and all of them. He has one, and I think he got it made because it's, like, custom made for Crypt of the Necrodancer. And he sent me a picture of it, and he's like, "You jelly?" And I'm like, "God damn it. It looks amazing." I really, like, I love, rhythm games is probably my favorite genre.
So why don't you explain what Crypt of the Necrodancer is to people who don't know?
It's a roguelike rhythm game, but it's actually a dungeon crawler mixed with RPG elements. So you crawl through this dungeon that's all... randomly generated because it's a roguelike, and you fight enemies to the beat of the music. There's a lot about the game that I don't know yet because I haven't read too much into it, but I'm really excited for it because it looks awesome.
Yeah, that game looks really cool. So basically it's a roguelike dungeon crawler, so it's procedurally generated. And if you, like, dance off beat, then you take damage because, like, you don't dodge. And you, like, perform all your actions on beat. So it's, like, move and attack and block and such, like, to the beat of the music. it's really neat. I haven't played it. I just watch videos on it because I don't have a dance pad. And like, I know people who have played it, and they're like, yeah, it's really good. But if you don't have a dance pad, then it's like kind of not as cool because it's kind of like super easy because it was designed to be used with a dance pad.
Yeah.
Because if you just have like a controller, you're just like B, 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 A. It's like, but I mean, every rhythm game is kind of lame without the dance pad. Like, if it was designed around a dance pad. I mean, obviously, like Parappa the Rappa is a cool-ass game without a dance pad, because it wasn't designed to be used with a dance pad. But, like, DDR, if you, like, own that for, like, 360 or whatever, playing it without a dance pad is dumb.
Playing Guitar Hero with a controller is not cool.
Yeah, basically. But, That looks like a neat game. But I'll message Ryan and ask him about what dance pad he has, because he said it was like not super expensive and it like has a lifetime warranty. So
yeah, I have him. I think I have him on Facebook now.
Oh, really?
I could be wrong. Like a little bit after he was on the podcast, I messaged him and I was like, I love your stuff and I would love to collab with you at some time. And he was like, yeah, it's hard to collab with me because of my style, but I'd be into it. I'd be up for it in the future. I'm like, sweet.
Yeah, his style is strange, to say the least. I like his SGC video. His SGC video is probably his best video yet. It gave me a good chuckle. Because, like, he didn't fuck up the words so badly that you couldn't understand what he was trying to say. But you could see that it made everyone around him very awkward, like, very uncomfortable. Are you JonTron? Are you Jin Chan?
I don't know. I got a little bored of the SGC video, mostly because it was long. I think it's
one of his longer videos.
Yeah, I really liked his kid pics video. I think he needs to stick to a shorter style, because like when the video just goes on for so long, his style just slowly like starts to die as the video goes along. But with the shorter ones, like Kids Picks and a couple other ones that he did, they're just hilarious.
Yeah, I think the thing that I liked the most, though, about the SGC video was that, like, you could actually understand what he was trying to say, which is not normal. In his other videos, it's, like, they're just so jumbled up that you can't understand his meaning at all. Whereas in this, I kind of got what he wanted to say.
Yeah. You can understand him a good amount in the VVV review that he did. He actually was like, put a couple points across. It was funny. That was a good one too.
Alrighty then. So let's jump into some news.
Yeah, there must be a lot of it.
There's a good bit of it.
Yeah.
Let's start with something that's kind of old that I meant to talk about when Ryan was on, but I forgot. And I actually meant to talk about when Shane was on, but forgot. And then I meant to talk about the week before that, but also forgot. So every week I forget about this thing. And then I mean to bring it up the next week, and then I forget about it again. Crytek. I want to talk about Crytek. So
why do you want to talk about Crytek?
Because lately it's been rumored that they haven't been paying their workers at Crytek UK, I believe. They have had like a lot of key developers leave the home, leave some projects. I think the Homefront project actually, but and they've been losing a lot of money on some projects that weren't really what they normally do. Basically, so I don't know if you know this, but they did Warface, that free play shooter.
Yeah,
and that didn't really work out well for them, and they had some other projects that also didn't really work out. So Crytek is this company that's really good at making really beautiful AAA shooters. And that's basically what they do. But then they made Crytek
like
2.
Crysis.
But then they made Crysis 2, which was not nearly as impressive as Crysis 1. In fact, it looked worse than Crysis 1. It's because they like made a console version and kind of gimped the PC version. Now, no one would care if they made a PC version that was like better than Crysis 1, but had a gimped console version, like, visually.
Yeah.
But both versions were gimped.
And then, didn't they release Crysis 3, like, not even a year later?
It was, I think it was a bit over a year, but they released Crysis 3, unlike Crysis 2, Crysis 3 had a really great PC version. It ran really well, it looked really good, and I liked the level design. Because it wasn't like as corridor shooter as Crysis 2 was. It was like a lot more open up like Crysis 1 was, but not totally open world like Crysis 1 was.
I didn't play Crysis 1 or 2, but I played the multiplayer beta for Crysis 3, and that was really good. I like how it played.
I didn't like the multiplayer. Like the multiplayer. It's that it was just like COD, so I was like,
Or maybe it was...
Mostly I just like Counter-Strike, so I just play Counter-Strike. And so I was like, this is a lot like COD. And then I played it for a few days, and I was like, everyone else just played the multiplayer and got all the guns. And the guns that they have are better than mine.
I can't remember if it was 2 or 3 that I played the beta for, but I think it was 3. But I remember there being like cool invisibility perks and other perks and
Well,
cool
that was
things.
Stuff that you could always do in like number 2's multiplayer as well.
Yeah. But I thought it was cool. I thought it was a different experience. I enjoyed it for
It was mostly the progression system that set me off, because I started playing it several days after everyone else did, and everyone else had like already level capped, and I was like, everyone has good guns and I have shitty guns.
I played
Counter-Strike.
I played it on the beta where everyone was the same level always. So I can imagine if there's like a level differentiation on it where higher level people dominated the lower level people. I can imagine how that would become annoying.
Yeah, that was basically how it worked, because they just had better guns. And it was really frustrating. Because it's like, you have a gun that can two-shot me, and I have to shoot you 8 times, and this isn't like a skill-based thing. It's just, you have a better gun. But basically, they lost out a bunch of money, mostly because of like Warface, but they haven't really been paying their employees, is what has been rumored. As they've been like promoting a lot of people without a pay raise in order to get them to sign new contracts that force them to stay with the company for at least 6 months, so that like if they don't pay them, they can't leave even if they're not getting paid. Like crazy stuff like that. But they have apparently stabilized their financials. They've decided to start like addressing the rumors. But basically, their move, like with the new Homefront game, Homefront: The Revolution, which they're publishing with Deep Silver. I think that comes out next year. Comes out in 2015. They're basically moving back to games that they're like much more comfortable with, and trying to like basically save the company, because
I'm surprised Homefront 1 didn't do as well as I thought it was going to. I also played the beta for Homefront, and I had a lot of fun with that. Like, especially just like flying around with the drone and like tagging enemies, like just kind of being like an assist player. I thought it had some cool aspects to it, but like after the beta and the game actually came out, I didn't really hear anything about it.
I don't know. It was at that time when THQ was like just about to close down too.
Yeah, but, that's true.
Homefront: The Revolution, it takes like place at the same time as Homefront, I think, but like in a different city.
Yeah.
And so Crytek is making this game. It's kind of like a last ditch effort. It seems like if they don't do well on this, they might be fucked. They might go the way of THQ, but So they were working on this before THQ went bankrupt. That's why they're still doing this game, because Homefront was obviously a THQ property, and they were making Homefront 2 for THQ, and I guess they decided to co-publish it with Deep Silver because Deep Silver bought the IP. But Crytek didn't want to like lose out on this project that they had already half done, that they're not really getting paid for because the company that was paying them to do it went bankrupt. So this seems like kind of a, they have to do this, and if this doesn't work out, it might be quite a bad situation for Crytek, because You don't hear of anyone using the Crytek engine.
Yeah.
Except for them, basically.
Yeah, it's really right now the market's kind of dominated by the Unreal Engine. A lot of people are using it right now.
Yeah, but it's because the Unreal and Unity. I started building Unity. A game in Unity this week for work. I tried to use the Crytek engine once, and it's really time consuming to start up a project. I mean, it's a good engine, but you need so much stuff to start. Whereas the thing that's nice about Unity, basically just downloaded the asset pack that they distribute for free with Unity.
Yeah.
And started prototyping out a 2D game in an hour.
That's cool.
And if I wanted to do that with Crytek, I'd have to make some models, import them, make materials, then start scripting. Before you see anything and have a gameplay mechanic, it's 2-3 days.
That's ridiculous.
It's not ridiculous. I mean, that's how bigger games work, but it's just, it doesn't work for what I want to do, and it doesn't really work for a lot of smaller companies, and I think that's why Crytek, the Cry engine doesn't really get used a lot. But, the same thing with Unreal. Unreal also has, a much longer startup time than Unity does. Unity, oh my god, it's so quick. But,
I think
not that those are worse engines. They're probably better engines than Unity. For doing certain things, for doing what I'm doing, Unity is perfect fit. But,
yeah. I think the best and most popular, engine right now is probably RPG Maker. It's really good. I hear all of the 8-year-olds are using it.
Oh, man. So are you subbed to Retsuprey? Do you know who Retsuprey are?
Yeah, I know.
They started doing this series called Kickstarter Non-Starters, where they find bad Kickstarter video game Kickstarters, and then they kind of make fun of them. Half of their videos are, I'm making an a classic Final Fantasy styled RPG. I need $100,000 to buy sprites and hire a writer and hire a programmer. And this is our prototype, and it's just fucking Game Maker with Game Maker sprites. And I'm or not Game Maker, sorry, it's RPG Maker with RPG Maker sprites. I'm what the fuck are you doing? You can't ask $100,000 to make a game in RPG Maker. Get the fuck out of here. Crazy. Crazy world we live in.
Yeah.
Maybe I should kickstart my game project.
Dude, this isn't video game related, but someone made this Kickstarter, and it made about $75,000. And
is this a potato salad one?
It's no, not the potato salad. Fuck the potato salad.
Yeah. This one is the one. The internet went too far that day. The internet could have spent $12,000 on helping people actually fulfill their dreams, but instead you gave a man $12,000 for his $10 potato salad joke. And exactly. I just fucking hate you. You went too far. When you hit $100, you could have stopped, but you didn't.
But no, some guy made this invention where you can fill up 30 water balloons in 10 seconds, and you just flick it and they all come off and they're all already tied. So it's you can make 100 water balloons in a minute. I'm like, this is amazing. I need it. I need to throw all the water balloons.
I feel like there's only, I feel like you'll use that once. Worth it.
Exactly.
Will you donate at the $10,000 mark for the at the $10,000 tier?
Yes.
Meet the inventor of water balloon filler machine.
I know for the first donation or whatever, a small donation, that he mails you a package of 20 of them or something. Mm-hmm. It's a cool idea.
Well then, while we're talking about Kickstarter, there's something that we could talk about.
Not potato salad.
Do you know, they're this little YouTube channel, kind of, no one really knows them, they're pretty indie. You know Yogscast?
I've heard about them.
You've heard of the Ogs? So they had this Kickstarter, right?
Yeah,
they're pretty small. They had this Kickstarter, and their fans, they donated over $500,000.
Yep.
And then they had to cancel the game they were
making. Yeah, I heard. Didn't they offer, like, everyone who donated, like, a really small, horrible Steam game of their choice?
No, that's not what they did. They offered a game that kind of is like the game that they set out to make, but the developers of it have the technical prowess to make the game. I think the game was called, like, Tugs?
That's just horrible. The Ogscast is like, we don't have anything to do with them anymore. We're sorry.
Tug, that's the name of it. So Tug is basically a game where you, like, build a kind of, like, world. It's a build-a-game game, basically.
Yeah.
And, it's developed by a company called Nerd Kingdom. And they actually have a programmer. Kind of important thing to have.
I don't know. If you make about $500,000, you think you fucking hire someone to help you make the game.
But I guess not. Somehow the Yogscast didn't manage to do that.
Yeah, somehow.
So there's some crazy things about this Yogscast Kickstarter that are bizarre. So the game was kind of intended to be, like, the Kickstarter was intended to be able to start up the studio and hire a lead programmer and hire artists. And they hired a bunch of artists, but they didn't manage to hire a lead programmer. Because they couldn't find one, and then they couldn't find anyone who would actually want to be attached to the project. Because probably these people realized the studio did not have enough money with $500,000 to make a AAA game that also was super ambitious technology-wise. As in, you had to make your own voxel technology, as well as make a game that had tools to build games within it.
Yes.
Like, fucking crazy.
I remember them showing off, like, early alpha stuff in it. I was like, this is a cool idea, and it'd be interesting. I didn't think it was going to happen.
Some of the other things that they did with that money are also really irresponsible. Like, an E3 booth for E3 2012 before the game was really showable. Kind of shitty if you only had 500 grand. But
they were probably like, if we bring this to E3 and show people, maybe some business will go, this is a cool idea, and they'll give us $5 million.
Well, I mean, that's the obvious, and, like, that's obviously why, but you don't need the booth. That's the thing.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't need the booth. You just need the game.
Yeah.
And so there were some other issues. Like, they hired this one artist, but in the contract they didn't, like, specify why he was allowed to leave the project. And he got a job. He was working at Pixar at the time, but then he got a job at LucasArts. And LucasArts wouldn't allow him to continue working on Yogg's Ventures. So this guy had only worked for, like, 3 weeks and got paid the full amount for his contract, all 35 grand, and had to stop working on Yogg's Ventures. So there's 35 grand just gone right there for 2 weeks of work.
Oh, God.
And now, to be fair, a lot of people were like, if you had 35 grand, you should fulfill the whole job. And, like, that's a year's worth of money. Not for that job. 35 grand is, like, probably 2 months.
Yeah.
The fact that this guy decided to work on it for 35 grand means that he agreed to take a huge, huge pay cut.
Exactly.
Because he should be making a lot more than that. The man used to work at Pixar.
Yeah.
But Pixar people actually, get paid he was a working at money. Pixar at the time. But
Pixar
people
get paid a lot of money.
Yeah. Animators are, like, really good 3D animators are hard to find.
Yeah.
But
I found Yogscast through their, I don't even remember what it was called, but their little machinima story thing that they were doing. It was like their big hit, and it was like Shadow of something. It was basically everyone knows that they do it. They had this whole machinima thing where their fans made the world and made the story, and then they played through it. That's how I found them. I thought that was a really cool idea. And I thought that was, like, their main stick, and I thought they did that a lot.
They got popular because of WoW, actually. Oh,
well,
because they were in the Cataclysm beta. So basically, like, Total Biscuit, Jesse Cox, and the Yogg's Cast all got really big because of the Cataclysm beta, because they, like, played it every day and, like, did a video on it. Yeah. And then that's, like, what kickstarted their channels.
Yeah, okay.
Sorry for the pun.
I found them through their... They did, like, a kind of...
I think that's what made them more popular.
Yeah.
Because, like, once they started doing Minecraft stuff, they couldn't stop, basically. Yeah. It was like, all of the money!
Yeah. And I thought that was, like, their big shtick, and I thought that's what they were, like, they did a lot of. And then they released them, like, once a month, and my YouTube subscription box was filled with 20 Let's Plays a day. And I was like, well, I ain't fucking dealing with this shit, and I unsubscribed.
Yeah, mostly. And,
yeah, but, I don't like anything they do now.
There's some other crazy shit. Like, so this Kickstarter basically raised $450,000. And after this incident, the Yogg's Cast, like, took all of the money, and one of the, like, the two big guys, I think Lewis, decided that he would, like, handle all of the money for the project.
Yeah.
And, it's rumored that for their involvement with the Kickstarter, the Yogg's Cast got $150,000 of the Kickstarter money. That's just what I heard, like, on the Bombcast and some other places.
So, like, almost a quarter of the money.
A third of the money. Over a quarter. Third of the money. Over a third.
How is that
actually.
A third of... I thought you said 100,000. Oh, 150. I thought you said 100,000.
Nah. 150. So, over a third. Which really means that these people had to make a game on, like, $300,000, which is fucking insane. But, it was crazy. The Yogg's Cast have come out and said no, they did not take $150,000. But... Yeah.
If you were in that situation, you wouldn't come out and say, yeah, we took $150,000.
Yeah, you wouldn't. But it's pretty insane what happened there. It's really exploitative to, like, basically not know what you're doing at all. And that, okay, morally, them going and making this Kickstarter was pretty fucked up. So basically they, like, decided to put their name onto a game that was being made by a guy who didn't know how to make a game. Or, well, maybe he knew how to make games, but he didn't know how to make this game, basically.
Yeah.
Because the guy who ended up being the lead programmer, which is the guy who owned the studio, said, I never intended to be the lead programmer. And if you're, a game studio and you're doing a Kickstarter, you should probably be the lead programmer. Like... You should be the lead programmer. I think all of the successful Kickstarters already had a lead programmer. They already had a programmer on board. Because if you're, like, what's that game that you were talking about? Road Redemption, is that it? The motorcycle one?
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, that's a game where all of the guys working on it most of the guys working on it are programmers. Even if they can't get, like, even if the game gets kickstarted but they run out of money, they can still finish the game because they can program it and make it not buggy. The art might not be as good. The art could probably be better. But the game could get done. Whereas this game, if they ran out of money, could not finish. It was impossible. And it's happened to a couple other games. There was a game called Swordsmanship or something like that. And it was a game, like a sword fighting game. And the guys who owned the studio and ran the Kickstarter was, like, a gameplay designer. What he meant by that is he knew how to use a sword, but he didn't know how to program or actually design a game. He's, like, just had a passion to make a game about sword fighting. And then the other guy was, like, a lead artist. So they had art, and they had a concept for a game, but they ran out of money and couldn't pay the programmers to finish it. So the game did not get finished.
Yeah.
And so, like, it's kind of... What the Yogg's Cast did is morally reprehensible, because if they didn't know what would be entailed into making a game about like this, then what they should have done is went and found expert opinion that wasn't the guy who approached them to make the game, and then find out what's actually needed. And be like, okay, this game will cost $5 million, if you guys can't raise $5 million, we won't attach our name to this. Because what they did was they attached their name to a Kickstarter that way lowballed its number. They're like, yeah, we only need $100,000. That's what they were actually trying to raise, and they got $500 almost.
Yeah.
And they lowballed the number, and they ran out of money, and the Yogscast exploited their like subscribers in order to make that money. Now, even if they didn't misappropriate the fund, like, even if they didn't misuse the funds, or let's say just steal that $150,000, it doesn't matter, because the game didn't get done. The thing, like, they most definitely did this one thing, which was exploit their subscribers.
Yes.
And yet, for some reason, their subscribers don't give a shit.
Yep, and there's some of them that are still defending them about it, and it's just kind of sad. But, you know, a fan base will always have people like that.
Yeah, I know. It's just like,
I donated $400, but I'm not getting a game. But that's okay, because it's Yogscast, and they're my favorites. They make the Minecrafts.
Yeah, but it's like, the Yogscast, before they put their name on this, really ought to have found an industry expert, paid him to consult them for however many thousands of dollars he wanted. He probably didn't want $10,000. It would be like, these are all of the things that you're going to need. It's going to cost you this, how much, like, this much money. Here's my $5,000, please. Before they decided to put their name on this. Because what they did was wrong.
Yes, definitely. It's not correct at all. It shouldn't have happened that way, but it did. And it's not cool, Yogscast. It's not cool.
Yeah, it's pretty fucked up. But, you know, that's
Kickstarter. You know what is cool? You know what is cool?
What?
Potato salad.
Oh, that potato salad.
God. That potato salad better. He had a private stream for anyone who donated to watch him make the potato salad. Then he had a potato salad where everyone who donated was invited to his potato salad party.
So dumb. So dumb.
I want some $10,000 potato salad.
Let's talk about some Google stuff.
Oh, some Google stuff.
Yeah, so the Google buying Twitch thing has re-arisen.
Yes,
it
has.
It's apparently going to go down for $1 billion.
That's a lot of money. Wait, so Google is giving Twitch $1 billion?
They're buying them for $1 billion.
I wish I had that kind of money just to throw down. But so far, they've already implemented a few things.
There's a lot of stuff that's been kind of cool that they've actually been implementing.
Yeah,
that's
like when you're watching someone on YouTube, and if they're streaming on Twitch, it'll pop up in a little notification, then it's like, I'm streaming on Twitch right now. If you want to come watch, click here. And then if you click it, it'll bring you to their Twitch channel. And that's really cool. I like that. I like those tiny things that they've been implementing. And
yeah,
I
feel like it's getting
that.
Really obvious that Google's actually going to buy Twitch, because there's a lot of like API stuff, like a lot of background programming stuff that are just features that they're putting in that really wouldn't be there otherwise.
Yeah.
YouTube would not synergize the Twitch so much if they weren't about to own it.
Yeah, it's obvious that they're going to own it. And I really like what they're doing with it so far. I know a lot of people were like on the fence. They're like, they're going to ruin Twitch. Everything's going to be horrible.
I don't think they're going to ruin Twitch, because I think that a lot, they're going to not, like, Twitch is working so well. Google doesn't generally buy things and then fuck it up, is the thing. Like, no, people complain that they fucked up YouTube. I don't know if they used YouTube back in 2006. Yeah. It was really bad. It was really, really bad. They've done a lot of good things for YouTube. Just because they continuously do UI changes, just like Facebook did there for a couple years, where they really fuck them up and make it irritating. Yeah. But if you guys remember the old UI, no matter how many times they fuck up with new UI changes, it's going to be better than that one.
Yeah.
Unless they decide to go back to that one, in which case I will argue worse than that one, only because they already knew that one was bad, and yet they brought it back 10 years later.
There is one thing that's a big fuck up that I recently noticed, because someone, I think it was Oni, tweeted about it. I could be wrong, but someone tweeted about it. And it was literally, you know how YouTube has a thing where you can, like, pay to stream movies from them?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, if you try to do that, you can't do that if you have a Google Plus account linked to your YouTube. And that's necessary now.
You can't? So really?
You can't
stream. Well, that seems like a bug. Yeah, might be fixed. That seems like a high priority fix.
Yeah, definitely. You can't pay YouTube to stream movies from them if you're attached to the thing that you have to be attached to use YouTube. So I hope that gets fixed, because that's just stupid.
That's probably already been fixed. But, no, that's going to be interesting. Hopefully they don't, like, do some crazy integrations that break it, but...
From what I've heard, a lot of people have been saying that Google is buying Twitch, but they're not affecting it. They're still giving Twitch full rights to what happens to their site and what they do with it. They're just helping support them.
Well, at this point, no one really knows what they're going to do, because obviously it's not public, but... that's a thing. And now we got a couple delays, and then we'll end this this podcast. We'll end this week. So, there are two games that have been delayed. Battlefield Hardline has been delayed until 2015.
Wow.
So, until next year. Until, like, February, I think. It was supposed to come out in the fall, and I think it's been delayed until February of 2015? Let me see. Early 2015. So, like, the beginning of the year, basically.
That had, like, a pretty well-played beta, so that's...
There were a lot of complaints about that beta.
Really? I only heard good things about it. But I'd rather...
I know that Shane... I know that people said good things about it when they, like, were on YouTube, but, like, a lot of the complaints that people had, I think, are completely fair. I think that, like, a lot of the complaints were, this is basically a mod, which I think is a fair criticism. It's the same engine. It's some of the same assets. It's the same gameplay. It's the same basically everything. It's Battlefield 3 with a reskin. Or, I mean, Battlefield 4 with a reskin.
Yeah.
And it's just like, really appropriate a year later when Battlefield 4 is so broken.
Yeah.
And they didn't really talk about what they're doing with the single player. But,
I think it's a good plan, because I think it's better than releasing something that'll be as bad as Battlefield 4, or that's just not ready. And I think it's still, even if it is ready, I still think it's a little too close to Battlefield 4's release and all of the hate that Battlefield 4 has been getting.
Yeah. I don't think that they can release another Battlefield 4. Like, they can't have another Battlefield 4 incident, basically.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, that game was a mess. It still kind of is. But, they want a stable launch. They're going to put new gameplay features into it to, like, really distinguish it. At least this is what they're saying. But I also don't think it's wrong. Like, I think it's probably a good idea to move that game out of the fall time period. Because, I mean, everyone's just going to buy COD anyways, or buy a million other games. There's a million games that come out in, like, that October, November window, right?
Yeah.
Basically, every big game comes out in those 2 months. And it sucks. Like, it sucks. Because you can't play all of them, and you want to. So there's something to be said, like, when a game comes out in February, that's, like, a big game, I'm pretty much guaranteed to buy it and play it all the way through. Because I have the time to do it. Because nothing else is out. So, why bother competing with COD when you can just release 6 months later and not compete with it at all?
It's a perfectly good, reasonable explanation. There's just too many games that come out at that time period.
Yeah, like, just there was that one day of death where it was like 7 AAA titles coming out on November 7th, I think, for this year. October 7th. That's what it was. October 7th this year, there was Dragon Age Inquisition, which also got delayed. It got delayed till the 18th of November, just because they need an extra 6 weeks, basically, to polish the game. And if you've ever done game development before, or know people who'd have, that, like, last month is where all the polish comes in, basically, because the game is certainly feature complete at that point. You can't put a new feature in. You'll just break it.
Yeah.
But you can, it's where you basically can just polish the whole game. So by delaying the game a month, they have the time to polish it, basically, which is nice. So that hopefully that game turned out a lot better than Dragon Age 2 did. But yes.
Did you hear?
But like October 7th, there was like a new Assassin's Creed, a Call of Duty, two Assassin's Creed, I think, Unity and that other one, the one in France, and then Call of Duty, yep. And like just tons of games. There was like six games. Of them, and it's like all on, six AAAs, like all on the same day. It's like how the fuck do you expect me to play all of these? Like. Could you guys just delay two or three of these games so that I can play these?
Did you hear when the new Sonic game is being released?
I haven't heard when the new Sonic game is being released. When's that?
It is being released, I think, I could be wrong, but it's really close to this date. Like, a week after the new Super Smash Bros. Comes out for Wii.
For Wii U?
Yeah, so that Sonic game is going to completely flop.
There's not a lot of Wii U games. If it's any good, I mean, it kind of looks like Adventure. I've just heard it's bad Adventure, which doesn't make me feel good, but hearing stuff about this game. I mean, there's other games where it's like they show it to you and like, this looks like a bad version of this, and then they never let you play it because they're like, oh, well, people might not like this game, so we better not let anyone play it. And then all you have is this, like, footage from 9 months before release where it looked kind of bad.
Yeah.
At least this one, people were like, it's all right. They changed it, and they made it all fucked up and bad now. They changed it again. It's kind of all right again. Like, at least we're, like, getting this nice kind of flow of information where it's, like, you're seeing the game progress. Even though we're not necessarily seeing it, we're actually just hearing from a bunch of game critics, but whatever.
Yeah.
They're letting people play the game that I trust. Specifically,
putting
Jeff Gerfman,
who doesn't
even like those
games
anyways.
Putting a release so close to Smash Bros. Probably not a great idea.
Eh, whatever. There's not a lot of Wii U games anyways, so I mean...
This is true.
Also, they probably want to release the 3DS and the Wii U version at the same time, and I bet there's no 3DS games coming out around then, are there? Because Smash Bros. For the 3DS is already out.
Did that already come out?
Well, I mean, it's going to be already out by that time. I think it comes out in, like, a couple weeks or something.
Yeah,
like
I think it comes out very soon.
Definitely. They just did that stuff at,
that thing.
Comic-Con. San Diego Comic-Con.
I was going to say, Ryan's lost it.
Nope. I was thinking, I was reading something and trying to think of what I was saying, and I just lost it. Comic-Con. Yeah. They did a big tournament at Comic-Con.
They've done a couple big tournaments.
Well, they did a 3DS one, not a Wii U. Okay. This is the first time they've let people play the 3DS one, basically.
Hmm. What else do we got news-wise?
That's it. That's the
that's
end.
It?
Yeah, well, that's the end. That's an hour and a half podcast, man.
Didn't you say that there were two...
Those two delays.
What was the other delay? Oh,
Dragon Age.
Yep, Dragon Age. I already forgot.
But, that's it. That's the podcast, man. That's an hour and a half. That's right on time.
We did it. Hooray.
We hit the hour and a half mark, and we're ending kind of around the hour and a half mark.
Yeah.
We always fall way short. Like, we hit an hour, and we're like, man, we can't come up with this last half an hour. Or we go way over, Shane.
Yes, Shane.
Oh, by the way, big congratulations to Shane. He got on Channel Awesome, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, that lucky, lucky man. He got part of Channel Awesome. Congratulations,
he deserves it.
Man. He does. He does. He makes some great quality content. You have not subscribed to ReRez TV, go do that right now. YouTube.com/ReRez TV.
Go subscribe to Shane.
Subscribe, like, comment, subscribe.
I guess this
Tumblr,
is the point
Facebook,
where we should
Twitter,
just
Reddit.
Plug all of the things. So yeah. I guess this is going to be a week where we thank all of our previous guests. Thank
every
you
single
all
one
previous
of them.
Guests. Every single one. We're going to read them all off right now.
Thank
you. Scarfulu.
YouTube.com/
I think it's Scarfulu, but it might be something different. I don't know. I just know his name is Scarfulu. Dex the Swede. Ryan Stepp. We're not going to do it. I'm sorry. We're not going to do it.
Silvermania. Cat Icarus. Let's go.
Jags.
There's too many. That other guy who used to be
future
on the podcast
guests.
With you.
Satchbags. Satchbags. Huh? He probably doesn't even listen to this. Don't worry about it. But, no. We should probably plug that Dalton Childs intro.
Oh, yes.
You've seen her listen to our intro? It's pretty legit. DaltonChildsProductions.com.
It's sexy.
Yeah.
You know you want one of those on your YouTube channel.
Yeah, use coupon code DAPPER when you buy one, and you'll get 10% off. He will make you a custom intro. It'll be like 5 seconds. It's pretty legit.
Also, some breaking news. The Destiny beta has literally just gone offline right now.
Are you
sad? At 9:30 p.m. Eastern time while we're recording this, and yes, I'm sad.
Sorry. Sorry.
What am I going to do now with my life? I have nothing to do until September. I guess I could make videos or something.
Make a video. Like, that's going to happen. Hopefully that happens.
Shut up.
So let's wrap this thing up. So yes. Thank you, ladies and gentlemen, for watching and or listening to the podcast this week. I've been your host, Ryan. With me, as always, Joe. Not as always. Yeah. Finally returning.
Finally Joe. Returning after half a month.
Joe.
Ryan. And,
we'll see you guys next week. Goodbye.
Bye.